You're listening to the good.
Don't call me Paino.
The bad.
Absolute.
And the rugby.
Folded like a deck chair.
With Paino, Lord, and the Husk. I don't know what that means.
Away we go yet again. Episode 16. Who'd have thought that we'd get this far in the new quest of the good, the bad, and the rugby? With me, Alex Payne. Hello, everybody. I hope you're well. I hope it was enjoyable to get stuck in to some rugby last weekend. A nice little three ball and teeing off this week, James Haskell and Mike Tindall, which is
not the kind of three ball I'm used to, Alex, but I like the way you had that.
And away we go.
Don't bring that couple's quarantine shit into this show, will you?
Well, you say that.
Don't drip your smut into what is a very
It depends what day of the week it is. If it's a Monday, then we're like high-level rugby chat ranty. If it's a Tuesday, it's all about, you know, who's been diddling who. And on a Thursday, Friday, it's some high-level intellectual chat about leadership, maybe with some SAS people. Who knows what day of the week it is?
Somebody somewhere actually could do something very funny by chopping together all of your podcasts. So you'd have the question, what was the last butt plug variety that you used? And Tins would then respond and say, I thought it was sensational at the weekend. Stick it up the jumper or whatever it was. That's probably going to come out. But
Well done for giving people ideas.
Yeah, exactly.
Best entry wins a free Amazon delivery from James Haskell. How's it gone down? A diabolical...
A drill, though, delivered to your door.
You're like, oh, dear. Reaction across the paddock, please, to the... I mean, we call it an advertisement. I don't know what on earth it was in the end. It was a sort of 4.5 minute Husk Randathon.
There's quite a few mixture of things that was in there. I thought Husk, you know, really did find a vocation he excelled at. And, you know, I think, as myself and Husk discussed, we almost found the real true third wheel to this wheelbarrow. I want to lead from the front in Archie. So, I think
does your wheelbarrow have three wheels?
It does, if you just like to push it at the back.
It's a royal wheelbarrow, obviously. I've only got one, sadly. Well,
it's a farm wheelbarrow.
Technically, it does.
It's when you've got a shitload of weight in it, Alex. I know you can't lift more than 2 kilos.
Sorry, I've got someone to do that for me.
When it's Tins' wheelbarrow, it technically does have three wheels because there's a servant pushing it with two of his speed wheels and a third wheel at the front. So everything's sort of three wheels.
Husk, where is the balance between the lovers and the haters for your thespian efforts?
I mean, I'm not being funny, but the feedback's been incredible. I mean, my phone, to say that it's been blowing up with Hollywood would be an absolute lie. I mean, pretty much it's going to fade into insignificance, but actually the feedback from everybody was incredibly positive. I would like to suggest that people really need to get out a little bit more, because people are like, that's the funniest thing you've ever done. I was like, well, I was dressed like the bloke off the buses with the jaunty side hat. People were like, you don't actually work for Amazon. And I was like, no, of course I don't work for Amazon. However lovely that job would be, not yet, but no. So that was quite amusing. I mean, I would say it's probably one of the best sort of sketch works we've done. The only bit of real negative feedback we got was Alex's super dry vest that he was wearing on the beach. That was flagged up as disgusting, rank, have a word with Paino.
I was just trying to play the part. I mean, I thought we were all acting. I wanted to show myself as a man of the people. I thought the cravat on the beach was possibly a little bit too much. So we tried someone actually told me that they thought my shoulders looked rather strong and big. So I took that. I mean, as feedback comes.
Yeah, you take anything from a 12-year-old child, though, don't you? Oh. Yeah, any positive feedback.
Curzon, marks out of 10.
Outstanding.
Yeah,
I mean, he was the best thing about it.
Yes, I would say that his ad lib was fantastic. I mean, again, you know, a lot of it got left on the cutting room floor, but some of the my favourite bits were when he went, "What's your heart rate? Fancy doing some dumbbells?"
When you're walking away, what's your resting heart rate? Ask. Come on, we'll do a quick emo. Let's do an emo. Just a quick.
I think it's Tins. I think it's an emon. Doing an emo is something very different.
Sorry. Yeah, we're back on quarantine again.
Yeah. Do an emo, get you into trouble. Emon.
My parents-in-law live in Stroud, and I think are slightly concerned about the reputation of their daughter within the Shires, but I think we'll just have to file it under acting.
But she is delicious.
Delicious. So.
Telling her that for years. Slightly curious start to the show if you've got absolutely no idea what it is that we're talking about. If you don't, can I please direct you to @goodbadrugby, where you can see James, Mike, Nigel Owens, and God forbid, Archie Curzon in our advertisement for the Autumn Nations Cup. It's for Amazon Prime Video. Speaking of which, well done. They're off and running. Very, very smooth departure from the station. And we're also going to upload a little bit of a Team of the Week on our YouTube channel. That's going to be recorded a little bit later on. It's a special mini show that you can find each week of the tournament. There's a slightly curious and new twist to it, although we may be tinkering with that as we do it. Everyone does Teams of the Week, but we think we've got a little something special for you all to get involved with. We've also got a competition, which is the Autumn Nations Countdown, and that's what we're talking about. You can win prizes by getting involved in the twist on our Team of the Week. So head to @goodbadrugby or our various social media channels to get involved in that. And of course, don't forget, you can watch Weekend 2 of the Autumn Nations Cup live on Prime Video every weekend throughout the tournament. And you can follow and subscribe @PrimeVideoSport on YouTube, Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok. We're going to dig into more of the weekend's games a little bit later on. We're going to look ahead to the second round in the show as well. But before we do that, we've got a new addition to the team. Where's Bert?
He's actually lying down in a bed next to me asleep, and it's the first time he slept for a while, so I don't want to pick him up and show you him. But he is he's unbelievable. Do you know what? I text one of my former teammates to won't embarrass him, and I someone that you wouldn't think necessarily might answer my calls. And he said, this is Atwood as well.
Just chug the name out.
I mean, who do you think we always joke never talks to me? He basically went, about time you got some responsibility for something. Yeah. And I was like, I'm getting that a lot of like, it's about time you've grown up. But he's beautiful. Basically, he's a fox red Labrador that unfortunately their owners, one of them was been really ill in hospital, and they wanted to rehome him. And I basically sent a picture to Chloe. She was like, we've got to have him. And we've had him for 24 hours. And he is the loveliest dog ever. He's the best looking member of the family by a shadow of a doubt. He's slightly better potty trained than Chloe, which is always a fucking bonus.
Someone's an experiment tonight. Yeah, keep going.
He's wonderful. He's just teething though, so we have to keep putting giving chew toys because my fingers, like, he's right biting them off.
He might be able to fix a few of them. You might be able to a bit. Yeah, trim some bone away.
Well, if you nibble that one off, we're absolutely flying.
That's what you say to Chloe normally, isn't it?
Have you said to Bert, this is the Hass train and you're either on it or you're off it? Does he know how the law is laid down in your house?
Yeah, so when I was sitting down last night and we were having dinner and I'd given him a chew toy to keep him away from us, he came and sat on my head and bit my beard and real hard, bit me on the face and was chewing my ear. And I honestly had to have a word with him. And I was like, I'm not joking, Chief. This is my house. You know, we're not having any of that nonsense around here. Go and bite Chloe.
Don't ruin the moneymaker.
But this is Poundland at the best of times. Do not rip it off. It looked like a council estate building with a side of it ripped off, you know, graffiti. I don't need that.
One weekend with us, Hask, and you walk away with a dog, you see?
Well, that's what I mean.
You did try and half-inch one of our dogs, so...
Yeah, I've got to say, Mike's got the most wonderful dogs, and one in particular called Blink, who's a boxer, and she is so nice. She just loves cuddles, and I, honest to God, thought, I'm not going to have this away. And as soon as I got back, I was like, onto my dog, man. I was like, right, I want to get a dog. Let's sort it out. And then I was going to get a Rottweiler. And this came up, and now we're in love. And the best thing is, it likes Chloe better than it likes me. So we're winning across the board.
Is this also a sort of public advertisement that if anyone's doing a dog show, Channel 5, Day TV, UK Living, whatever it might be, Hask is now available for selection? Where there's a cash, there's a Hask?
Well, Dylan Hartley did reply on my Instagram, dogs get likes. So immediately, I mean, a picture of Bertie sitting on my head has had more likes and interest than anything I've ever done, which is a positive. And also, if I didn't have enough strings to my bow, it's not really a bow, it's sort of a harp with the amount of schemes and spizzes I'm up to. It's just another thing we can get sponsored for. So any dog companies, I will, for cash, promote your dog treats and items.
I was going to say, you've definitely been doing something because you've had a lid trim and a beard trim.
No, it was pre-lockdown. As soon as lockdown came, I was looking like the wilderness man, and I thought I'd get everything just tightened. Because in that Amazon advert, I mean, I look like I've come in on some sort of horse and cart from some sort of park. I don't know where I've turned up from, but it's like, it was when I was riding around the tank so with grenades promote like keeping the gyms open. And I looked like, I was like, keep the gyms open, keep the gyms open. People would just look like, oh my God, look, they're giving that guy a ride out in the tank today.
I love it. Amazon Prime Video. I think we were more sort of Amazon secondary, Amazon tertiary video.
Yes.
Amazon. Yeah, exactly.
That's why they didn't give us any of the gigs on actually presenting.
Yeah. I think if anyone's seen this before, setting us off in a live environment might not necessarily be the most sensible broadcasting decision. It's interesting you talk about dogs, though. I remember doing a game. Do you remember the final game that you guys played in Paris before the 2015 World Cup, when the wheels really were beginning to wobble before that tournament unfolded?
It was
absolutely dire. I remember that game because we had Sir Clive Woodward in studio. There's Sir Clive, who tweeted a picture of himself at the Stade de France and said, about to go live with Sky Sports, England's final warm-up game before the Rugby World Cup. And it got 3 or 4 likes. And then he sat on his phone and tweeted a picture of his black Labrador by mistake. And it got 1,500, 1,600 likes, retweets, comments, etc. Which kind of just shows you, I think, that your point is, Hask, if you're going to start winning the social media battle, you've got the right tool to do it.
Well, I had something this morning. So I'm a celebrity, as started this Sunday. So out with the old, in with the new. I'm no longer now, you know, I mean, I was never up there, but we're sort of a forgotten people now. But the best thing was that on their first trial, they actually won Rabbit, right? And obviously there's been a huge outcry on social media in the world. You can't eat rabbit. You can't eat rabbit. I posted videos like, you fucking can, and it tastes amazing. When I got it, I got crocodile feet and eels, right? Rabbit, that's unbelievable protein, you know, cooked to the inch of its life. Man, I don't know what they're complaining about. So it's what I give with one hand with the animals, I sort of take away the other. It's like rabbit shooting, deer shooting, excellent. Dogs and animals, welfare is important, you know?
Good. Yeah. Ask showing the credentials and the softness of touch, you know, all the way into week two before being spat out by the public. Talking of the telly box, new series of The Crown started. Are we talking about that? How's that gone down behind closed doors?
I need to catch up. So I actually saw the advert for it and I was like, ooh, I need to catch up with, because I only got about halfway through season three. So I started watching season three last night and then I'll catch up. But I've seen it all over the place this morning and on this popular midday TV show. So yeah, I'm quite intrigued to see where they go with it, because obviously it's an era that people are fascinated with, isn't it?
It's getting harder to watch the more modern it gets, because you can just sort of see people's reactions to it, kind of thing.
Yeah. Well, it's getting to more things that people know about, isn't it, and have opinions about. So that's where it gets difficult. But remember, everyone, it is a drama, so it's
when's a bit of drama. When's the best bit when they're going to have some bloke with a nose round here and ears like that coming in, like, and this is you. Hi guys, I'm Kendall. I mean, oh my God, like, who's this fucking guy steaming in the background like that? All right, Queen, high five, and a drunk. And they just have to look aside like Charles go, well, you know, that's...
His reaction's like, this isn't funny, James. Back up.
No, that's Mike Tindall.
I just didn't realise I spoke like that. I'm looking forward to Jason Statham rocking in, looking cool as fuck with a northern accent. That's why.
It's going to be Wayne Rooney.
Hey, you guys! And it'll be like that. And the Queen will be like, what's happening here? Hey, you guys! I'm on a stag do! Like, oh, Tindall.
Buffalo!
Buffalo! Wait, Prince Philip, he's buffaloed again. Fuck off, Tindall. Mate, I can't wait for that. That's season 5. You've got to be in it. You're part of it.
I think it's season 62, I think. It's a long way to go, yeah.
Do you think there'll be a Tindall wedding special, in which case, Hask, who will play you? And will the incident, will that just be redacted, or will that actually get sort of played out?
No, I mean, that has to be the main incident of the full Harry Schlapp.
They don't even know about that, Tins. That wasn't what we were talking about. But now you've revealed that as well. That's going... Now you've put that in. The show's now on the map. Nobody knows about that. You've now just gone...
We'll blame Leslie Vinicola for that one.
Yeah,
it was funny. I was thinking about who could have played Hask, but then I was going through like Hollywood meatheads that could play Hask, and obviously you can't. All of them were far too good looking. But I stumbled across like a cartoon 15, and Hask got mentioned twice in the cartoon 15.
Johnny Bravo
was one.
Mr. Incredible.
No, they put Lawrence down for that one, and I would definitely.
Yeah, he could be my stunt double. He can hold my milk, foam-free, cream-free Frappuccino that I'll throw in his face, something like that. Well, fuck this, Lawrence. I fucking said it.
Have you ever played Clash of the Clans?
No, because I'm not a virgin and live at home with my mum, but...
You know, so they've got barbarians that just run into battle and don't think for themselves, and they just got that. I was like, and that's one of them. I was like, that's perfect for Hask. Oh, yeah, Jamie Robert as Desperate Dan. Easy peasy. Wayne Barnes, Tintin, which I thought was very, very good. And then they had an unbelievable picture of Stuart Hogg. And then the baddie in the Incredible Syndrome, and they looked identical.
Oh, yes.
Going
with his new hair.
Yeah.
I like that.
That was outstanding. I will put it out there now because you're definitely going to probably look at it. And I was thinking, this is really funny. Everyone's really funny. And I found myself on there next to Shrek. Brilliant. Thanks.
Oh, that's not fair.
I think it's
very
not
fair on Shrek. Poor Shrek. You're not even green. I'd be Chris Hemsworth to play me. 100%. Thor.
No one.
Yeah, he would. Of course he would.
No one.
He would. We're like brothers.
He's leaned down now with that centre fitness thing that he's doing. He's leaned down. He's dropped a bit of muscle, hasn't he?
He has, yeah. Yeah, we're all leaning up, mate. We're all leaning up. It's that time of year.
He says, swimming. We should get back to our 15s at some point, actually. Everyone loves the 15 across the rugby spectrum. Enough frivolity. Let's go from fifth to third. We are just a little old rugby show that doesn't really talk about very much rugby, as we've said many, many times before. We get together for a bit of a chinwag, and I think I've sort of said this a few times before, we do it mainly because it's just quite good fun for the three of us, and those that join us, it's always an absolute pleasure to have you alongside. But last week...
Alex, tell the truth. The reason we do this show is that we absolutely get no serious work in any other relation to rugby in the rest of it. Couldn't get a commentary role if everybody died. We can't get involved by the side of the field. This is the only thing we've got, and we make it ourselves. Basically, it stops you, me, and Tins shouting at our partners or just shouting into an empty room or shouting at the TV. This is all it is. This is the extent. This is like mental health.
We are three unflushable turds that comes together to make make a rugby podcast. Yeah. What is noticeable is that the more I've been doing this, the more my corporate work has been drying up. I can't work out whether that's me or being associated with you. But any which way, what I was trying to say is last week we had a quite almighty pickup off the back of the show that we did with Jason Robinson. I'll be honest with you, I had absolutely no idea that we were going to end up talking about the things we spoke about. I thought we were going to be talking about World Cup winning tries and Lions tours and Wigan's great days, but we ended up going into some far sort of deeper channels. And actually, you've caught up with Jason today, haven't you? We sort of picked up with him. I think he's been quite overwhelmed by the reaction to it, but also I think is very keen that off the back of it, it's about action and not just more talking. Did you chat to him today, Tins, and how was he about everything?
Yeah, we had a chat. Obviously, we're getting a second episode in at some point. We sort of asked if he'd come on and just give us a... how he felt that the response to the week had been, but he just said, look, a few things have come off the back of it. I want to get through those meetings and have those chats before, as he said on the podcast, he's all about action. He's not about talk. So he wants to wait to see if that action happens and then he'll come back and talk about it. But he did say it'd been a fantastic reaction and he was sort of blown away with it, but he wants to be a doer, not a talker. So I know he's got a few meetings set up this week and next, and then hopefully we'll get some good positive feedback when we get him back on.
It was amazing. I know the RFU tweeted that they were keen to try and rectify the wrongs of not having him listed as England's first black captain. And I know, you know, there's possibly been dialogue between the two parties before, but obviously not to the point that either is necessarily happy with it.
Just on that, for the RFU, it's great to tweet about it, but then you have to then back that up. So that's a little warning to them, is you can't just say, oh, yeah, we're on board, we're ready to chat. Then you need to pick up the phone and have that chat.
And hopefully there will be some action off the back of it. I mean, you know, I think everybody needs things, particularly, you know, around the game and around schools and around getting young kids involved in activities, which is what Jason is hugely passionate about. But let's get something done. Let's not just have a chat about it.
We're in a kind of a really dangerous period of time at the moment because everybody's talking about it. And because everybody's talking about it, everyone feels they're doing something about it. But actually, what is actually happening? What is actually changing? Because you do a lot of talking and you feel comfortable. You're like, yeah, I've talked about it. I put my hand up. I've supported. And actually, how much have you actually done? And I think it'll be really telling to do that, because I obviously wasn't involved in the show. I was told numerous times, mainly on Twitter, the dwellings of the troll, that it was the best show that Good and Bad Rugby ever done, and that I wasn't even on it. So I was like, no, that's nice. But I knew it was very powerful, and I saw the reaction, and I've listened to it. And I think, look, for me, Jason was an iconic player before he came into Union, one of the loveliest guys. And actually, for someone with that that ability and to be in the situation he's been, where he sort of went to rock bottom, went on a journey, found God, did whatever and came back out of it and done whatever, you know, whatever he's has now done, and he's striving to change. I think it's really impressive, and I think you know, I think there's some real momentum behind it, and it was a brilliant show to hear his stories. And I think that's the beauty of the Good, the Bad Rugby. There's plenty of people talking about rugby. Like, I'll be the first to admit, if you want a diehard rugby podcast, I definitely wouldn't come and visit here. But if you want to know about the stories behind the people, what makes them tick, and maybe sort of some things they're really passionate about, this is where you want to come to. And I thought you two handled it incredible. I thought Jason was even more inspirational. And I messaged him and I was like, mate, it's so powerful. And I'm glad that we've created some sort of dialogue. And I think that dialogue has to lead to action, because otherwise it's just words. People pack themselves in the back thinking they're chatted. And if they don't do anything about it, then it's pointless.
A number of our supporters or listeners or viewers will hopefully be familiar with the fact that we are starting something called the Saturday Squad, where we're going to try and roll up our sleeves, literally, harder for some to do than others, but we're going to find as many brand partners as we can and head to clubs around the country that really need some love and support. We've got our first club that we were going to go to, and then, of course, dear old lockdown 2 came along, so we've had to pause that. We will be getting out to, let's sort of call it along the West Country. We won't reveal it all too much just yet, but with Saturday Squad, the idea is to go into clubs and make a bit of a difference, whether it's Hask holding tackle bags or Tins taking coaching sessions or Chloe taking a fitness session or brand partners coming and supporting. And I've actually said to Jason that next time he's running some activity, we're going to take our Saturday Squad in a van, get up there and actually make a proper difference and get something on the ground that changes and inspires and hopefully, you know, activates those people who want to be involved with what Jason's doing. So we'll commit to actually getting involved with it and look forward to catching up with him. The other thing I very quickly wanted to touch on before we get into the rugby is I think the Barbarians 13 are going to find out their fate quite soon. It is bubbling and it's going to get a lot of chat off the back of it. It is worth reiterating that the panel that are judging them is purely independent. So this is not an RFU hand-me-down who are going to say, right, this, that and the other. This is an independent panel who are going to assess what has happened and what the punishments should be, and they can literally go anywhere. There's no precedent for them to act off. But I would love them to, instead of giving Chris Robshaw a 10-game ban and effectively ending his rugby career before he heads over to San Diego, to say, right, you've cocked up, all of you. You massively got this wrong. But instead of fining you, or instead of banning you from games, you are going to give us 10 days next year where we are going to use you for community rugby schemes. And we're going to send you to clubs that need support. And we're going to get you a paintbrush in hand and you're going to go and paint the bogs. And you are going to pay back by paying into the pot, by inspiring, admitting that you got it wrong and showing that you will actually, you know, get involved and literally make it good rather than just pay a fine or sit on the sideline. Can we get to a point where if someone gets it wrong, even in the Premiership games, if you get sent off, instead of a 3-game ban, which benefits nobody, or a 5-grand fine or whatever it is, you should pay your fines in doing good for the rugby community, which needs it more than ever before as we come out of COVID.
Well, that's a great idea. I think I've actually looked into this, because obviously, you know, I had my Barbarians rant, if you want to call it, and, you know, we said that I was going to get vilified, but actually, bizarrely, I had one bloke who runs a pub in Twickenham who told me that he loaded lost the money and I'd lost the plot because he didn't get the game. But everybody else was unanimously positive. You know, and I think you're exactly right. It's really important to reiterate that this is not an RFU panel, and the RFU don't have the ability to stop it. It's sort of like they put something into motion now. Someone's put something into motion and they can't recall it. It's like the start of a horse race. The horse is like running. And you're like, come back, please. And it's like over jump 7. I will say that if this is handled badly, this is going to be a bit of a PR disaster across the board, because actually everything that I said about happened, and there's actually more to it like that. And I'm not going to start revealing other stuff because there's obviously a case, but I know there's faults on both sides. There's details that haven't been got right. There's mistakes. There's been incompetency. And ultimately, fundamentally, the lads broke the rules. But everything I said about them going to cafe and everything else was true. And, you know, the understanding it wasn't a proper bubble is true. I think you're exactly right, Alex. It is a brilliant idea. But actually, what's really interesting is the transitory world we live in, nobody cares now. And this is the problem, is that England have won the Six Nations. They won the money for, was it 5 million for winning the Six Nations? I might be making it up. Someone said that 4 or 5, whatever you get for winning the Six Nations. And we've all moved on. We're now looking forward to it in a really positive manner. And at some point, this is going to come. Oh, by the way, some lawyer somewhere who's like beavering away, treating this, I'm led to believe, like a legal case. This is like not messing around. This is boys making deputation. This is like guys getting charged for going to the pub again, lying, on and on and on. And I think it's really interesting. And I think actually you're exactly right. Somebody somewhere, because there's somebody in charge, has got to stop and actually say, whoa, let's rewind this. Take your punishment, do exactly what Alex said. Let's give back to the community. Because you could effectively, someone like Richard Wigglesworth, a 12-game ban in his last ever season at Leicester, that's ending his career, essentially. Chris Robshaw, I don't know if this independent panel has any authority in America. I just put that guy out of South Park going, I do not respect your authority. I just fucking ignore it. I ignore it. I just think you're exactly right. But I will say this is heading for a bit of a PR disaster. And I just hope that sense wins out. And 9 times out of 10 with this stuff, sense does not win out. People are ticking boxes.
Please, 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 can we turn... It was a clear negative. I don't think any of us are disputing the fact they got it horribly wrong. But let's turn it to a positive. Tins, if you were sent... Were you ever sent off, actually?
No. Oh. Yellow carded twice, I think. Or three. No, actually, right. No.
You pick up your third yellow card of the season and you're going to get either a 3.5 grand fine and 3 games on the touchline, or you can commit to 3 days of your own time to go to Dursley Rugby Club or Forest of Dean and properly get involved and make an impact with that club. Which do you pick?
I would always pick going out and getting involved because you should be doing it anyway. The general how it works at a rugby club is that only if you're injured are you sent out into the community. It's never, if you're fit and healthy, you never see a player get community player of the year. It basically means you've been injured all season. You're right. I think you might not be able to get a broadcasting gig, Alex, but you should be invited onto these sort of panels because you do generally pretty good ideas. And I agree, because if they go hard after these players, who wins? There is no one who wins. The fans of their teams that they play for lose out because you don't get to see them play. You know, their teams get punished for their individual mistakes. I mean, you know, they still get paid. They're still going to go to training. They're just not going to be able to do their job that everyone wants them to do. And I don't think anyone benefits. Whereas I think if they do get sent off, you know, Chris Robshaw, all of them have been so apologetic and hands up. Yes, they did make a cock up. But then I would now ask that it's disciplinary hearing committee to not make the same cock up. It's not about money. No one's getting their money back from the mistakes that were made. So you're not going to gain anything. The only people are going to lose. So if you did something like the idea that you've suggested, people are actually going to win off the back of it. Whether they go do coaching, they have to go to their closest club. You don't have to make it so painful that they have to travel the country. But in their area, they go out and they coach every Tuesday night.
I'd love to know how many players pick up bans every year. How many days Prem Rugby could get from... I mean, Dylan Hartley would have been Community Player of the Year every year. I mean, he'd have played a lot more rugby, but he'd have mowed every single patch around Northamptonshire painted every changing room.
The whole idea of the banning and stuff is bullshit for red cards, because you get red carded for basically doing nothing wrong anymore. And instead of just taking the suffering that you cause from an accidental high shot, which there are so many now that lead to red cards, which aren't intentional, and the old days of a red card was for malice, they're long gone. So why then punish the player when he's been punished? Him and his team have been punished already. It makes more sense to put an active program in that will actually benefit rugby rather than just benefit the RFU's pocket or whoever the money goes to, and actually look at where that money goes from a fine. It probably will help more if the player goes and actually does it himself.
This situation, nobody's going to come out of this good, because there's incompetencies on everybody's side. And sometimes it's better to let sleeping dogs lie, because there's going to be some embarrassing things that are going to come out about both sides, what happened to RFU, how the game's done, and it's lose-lose. The second thing I think is, who are these panels? Because when I've been in disciplinary panels, and I've had a few, firstly, it's normally the most ardent criminals that have ever played rugby are suddenly
Dooley.
Dooley. Dooley.
Dean Ryan was head of sighting.
Jeff Probyn.
Jeff Probyn, right? Right. So you've got those guys who were like, used to bat, like, a ball and line up a guard, and they just punched him right in the face, first cap. Like, every story from an old rugby player would say, first cap, I looked across, and I saw, I saw Jeff Probyn, and when I went to get the ball, he knocked me out. And everyone's like, ha, ha, ha. No, that's legal. You could have killed him, right? So I love Jeff. I'm just using this as an example, right? So the panel. So I did a high tackle situation. There were 3 people on this panel, and I think one of them had played rugby before. 2 of them had never played, and they went, so James, talk us through what happened here. And I said, well, I ran up, and this is my red card, James Robertson. So I ran up. So I ran too fast. You know, old rig wasn't, you know, it was mobile. I thought I dipped my shoulder. I was aiming for where I thought was lower, and I went to smash him. And this bloke, right, goes like this, pulls out the rule book, and he goes, Mr. Haskell, show me where in the rule book it says to smash players. And I was like, obviously, and I had Richard Smith there, and Richard Smith saw me like leaning across the couch, ready to go, fuck are you talking about, right? And he was, and Richard was like, grab my hand. He's like, well, no, Mr. Haskell doesn't mean that. There's people like that are micromanaging shit in rugby, and rugby is full of these kind of people. I've never played, haven't played for like 30 years, are so out of touch, coming out with things like, well, you know, where does it say smash? Where does it say bang something? You know, what are you supposed to do at breakdown? Well, we've been told to like have controlled violence. Oh, it's violence, is it? What? No, it's the fucking game. Like, oh, sorry, let's play the game where we're all pretending that we're not trying to hurt each other in like a legal way. We're all just like tickling each other, are we? So you have shit like that. And I just don't, I can't remember what my third point was, but I just don't get those situations where I think if we had some more like level-headed, down-to-earth people, we would get those better decisions.
Are you auditioning for a place on the judiciary?
Yeah, it sounds like it.
Anyway. I mean, do you know what? I'd have a good go at it, but I'd fall out with all the other people because I would just turn around and go, please don't ever speak again. I know it's a three-way panel, but we're not going to listen to what you've got to say because you don't know what you're talking about. You've never played. And looks like you've never exercised. I mean, this one particular guy got into me. He looked like the only machine he'd operate in the gym was a bending one. That was it. So I just think you're exactly right. And I hope that somebody somewhere comes in. But the problem is with this bureaucracy, once the ball gets rolling, everybody has to have their say. Everybody has to be justified. Nobody can not say anything. Nobody has to have some input and go, oh, yeah, the third judge thought that, you know, the barbarians, it's like, shut up. Just give them all a fucking community service painting fences or something.
Can't imagine any members of the independent judiciary panel tune into the good, the bad and the rugby. So I was going to say, given our suggestion about community service over fines, perhaps we could send them, or someone could send them this, but given you've just trashed everybody on it, Has, perhaps we'll just let them make up their own minds after all.
I didn't say these particular people, but I know they're lawyers. I mean, the only time I've ever been to a disciplinary hearing where they went, after about 20 minutes, I could see them looking at each other, was when Pat Sanderson got cited for eye-gouging me, and I got cited for eye-gouging Pat Sanderson at the same time, right? At the same time, we called up their hearing, and I was like, yeah, I mean, Pat was an absolute nause, but I'd never eye-gouged anyone. And we're both, like, just having a scrap on the floor, and they went, James, did you eye-gouge Pat? I was like, no. Pat was like, did Haskell eye-gouge you? He was like, no. They were like, what were you thinking he did? It was like, well, we didn't. And they were like, should we just go home? They're like, yeah, we're just going to quit it now. But they still have to publish, like the RFU still have to publish like a massive statement. It's like the, you know, the recreational drug thing where they're just like the bum police, but they still have to publish it going, yeah, we did find 8 or 9 lads. Or, yeah, just like, everyone's just telling tales. It's all just justification. You can just get rid of all this crap. Not, you know, not as a drug testing, I'm saying, but you know what I mean?
Lawyers always win.
Has, did you get fined in 2011?
They gave me a suspended 5 grand fine, right, for the hotel incident, right, because I went in real hard. I told you, Rob Andrew went like, he like held up front page of a newspaper and he went, how do we get from this? Or how do we get, he played the video of the incident and he went, how do we get this? And I went, well, do you want the honest truth? Incompetence, mismanagement, incompetent media people, kowtowing in the face of the media. And he was like, by the way, I will go to the public and tell everybody this because my career looks like it's over. And they were like, okay, we'll give you a suspended fine. And then they tried to then, and they went, oh, by the way, we're going to fine you £600 because you've got everybody free Musto jackets. And the whole, even the coaching staff were having them. And I went, well, we went to New Zealand, it was freezing cold. Everyone wanted a jacket and you didn't supply any jackets. Like, what was I supposed to do? Yeah, but you tweeted about it, so we're going to fine you. I was like, guys, you're not going to fine me shit. So I got a suspended sentence, never paid it.
Yeah, because Dylan got out of it because he was the only one who took a lawyer in. So he got completely scot-free.
I took a lawyer, but I just got suspended. And that, you know. But then I told you, they found me guilty for being 3-on-1 in a room with a woman when they put me 3-on-1 in a room with a woman. So I just like, are you going to get fined? And they're like, no. I was like, well, I'm not paying either.
Good. You should have done a year's community service. You could have tarmacked the M25 and no one would ever have been none the wiser.
And I would have loved that. And my dream is to tarmac a road. I did a bit of it for JCB. I'd happily tarmac a road. I'd fucking build a clubhouse. Only if I had got to do with machinery. I'm not doing any hand labour. I'm above that. I'm better than that.
Good. I meant to do the intro at this point. I think we've got a couple of things to talk about on the show this week. Coming up, we'll talk about the only weekend of the Autumn Nations Cup. You are watching and listening to The Good, The Bad and The Rugby with me, Alex Payne, alongside Hask and Tins. Don't forget, you can sign up to our social media sites, Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. It's the best place that you can find out about our guests, competitions, and a range of merch as well. Is that up and running now? If it's not, it will be very, very shortly.
I love how you looked at me and Tins. We're like, yeah, Alex.
Go and buy T-shirts and caps, as well as some mostly good conversation on these socials as well. Plus, it's where you'll find the Nors for all the pub ammo, stats, and rugby info that you might require. Type in good, bad, and rugby. And let the Tinternet do the rest. Don't forget as well, we've got a Good Bad Rugby England-Wales warm-up party. This is taking place on Saturday, November the 28th. It's an exclusive virtual pre-match party with the Underground Fan Club, the three of us, plus special guests, audience interaction, prizes, etc., etc. Looking ahead to kickoff in our own inimitable fashion. Let us be your mates for the afternoon, it says. Necessarily sure about that bit. But do grab a drink, fire up Zoom, and come and hang with us at the Underground Fan Club ahead of England Wales on November the 28th. Register your interest at undergroundfanclub.com/rugby. And on that bombshell, shall we talk about some ruggers? Can we just start with Argentina, first of all? Vamos los Pumas. Do you know, there aren't a lot of results in the game at the moment which really warm your cockles, but that was remarkable, wasn't it? And have you seen the training video of them all in isolation, Hask? And there's all this on the old balcony, you know, one guy spent 6 months in his flat. There's Nicolas Sanchez ran 20 kilometres in his flat. I mean, it's just amazing that they've finally done it.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's exactly what we needed as a feel-good moment. I think, look, actually, bizarrely, it is a credit to New Zealand because beating them is always like it's like a moment for winning a World Cup final. It's amazing. You know, and once in my entire career did I beat them. I know Tins had a better record than that, but I think Kiwis, however upset they are, we'll come on to that. I think you should take it as a compliment because that's a mark of how good and how dominant you've been. But I think Argentina, you know, the passion, I thought, you know, Matt, just what a boy. I love that. When he's like talking to the referee, it's like, I see someone get kneed in the head. I'm playing for my country. It's moments like that when you can see how passionate they are. And I tell you who I also saw, Michael Checker in the box. You know, what I texted him, I was like, listen, I love that. You know, unceremoniously, and I think I'm fairly kind of criticised after leaving Australia. And what a moment. Just coming in, quiet, unassuming, sitting in a box next to Ledesma. And their back row just ran a clinic in battering, you know, New Zealand. And I think they were made to look relatively average. And then Sanchez, take a bouncer.
There was so many good photos taken of Czechs with captions like, learning how to stay humble. It's just like a smug smile on his face. I think if Argentina could pick their schedule, they'd have 405 days off between each test match. Just the intensity that they played at and just swarming on New Zealand. And, you know, that's a full-strength New Zealand team that they've gone toe-to-toe for. And they've just given a defensive masterclass of heart, passion, commitment, everything that you want out of the Pumas. When they play at the best, that is what they do. Not to bring it back to reality, but this week they've got to back it up. And if they can back it up again against Australia, then you hope that we can say that the Pumas are back. They've been away probably a little bit since that 2015 World Cup where they were playing insanely good rugby, if they can find that. And Sanchez can still keep doing what he's doing. I mean, it was made to be his day, wasn't it? That chip over, bounced off his mate's leg straight into his arm underneath the stick. So, yeah, I just to say back at what Hass said, the back row just led from the front. They were just insane. They had more possession, more territory, more turnovers. So, yeah.
You know, in that 2015 World Cup, I commentated on Argentina-Australia, I think in the semi-final.
That's because you weren't required to play anymore.
Yeah. That's because we've been thrown out unceremoniously. I had to wear like a bulletproof vest and a crash helmet to get.
I've got to be honest with you, that is bloody brave to go from being a member of England's World Cup squad that bombs out in the pools to then thinking, well, I might as well get a bit of media work off the back of it. Money makes money.
Oi, ball keeps rolling, Chief. World keeps moving on, doesn't it? It's like Lanny out, media carrying on. You just got to roll on, sir. You've got to roll on.
Unbelievable.
And basically, I did that. And interestingly, Argentina, I thought, were playing some of the most exciting, like very much like Japan in the last World Cup, were playing the most exciting rugby. The problem was they were making line breaks all over the place, but they played in all the wrong areas. And all that happened was Pocock just stole the ball in their 22, boom, penalty, and lost it. And I thought what was interesting is actually they played in some better areas, meaning that someone like Sanchez, and because of the indiscipline from New Zealand, meant that they were able to calculate and keep scoreboard ticking over. Sometimes because they played with that flair, they were their own worst enemies. And I think this was quite nice. If you can match that aggression, you know, Matera and, you know, the other boys in the back row, with that real discipline, then you suddenly start getting a scoreboard taking care of itself. And that's what you've got to do against New Zealand. But there's always that moment where, was it Sam Kane scored or somebody scored off the back of the line out with New Zealand?
Yeah, Sam Kane did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you think, oh, crap. This is where they come back, because any team in the world that can actually turn it round, like most teams are like an oil tanker. They take half an hour to turn around. You can't change the tactics because you've mentally got all the lads trying to do something. People who've made mistakes are trying to do it harder. You've practiced all week for a game plan. It's not working. They're the one team that can actually go, you know what, let's change how we're doing things. But they just couldn't do it. And I thought it was amazing. And Eddie Jones has been quoted in with the England squad walking around saying, listen, let's put smiles on people's faces. Let's give the British public what they want, or the English public what they want. And actually, Argentina did that for their nation. All the stuff that's been going on, all the misery and all the problems that they've had, they actually lifted a nation. And that's what rugby is about.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, they actually managed to flip. Argentina did what New Zealand normally do to people. You end up, New Zealand didn't hardly kick, which New Zealand normally protect their own ends so much, but they hardly kicked 16 times in the game, whereas Argentina just played, put them back, said, come on then, let's attack. And you could say that New Zealand sort of bought into it and thought they could run back. And whether you can say it was respect or not, I don't think New Zealand ever disrespect someone, but they expect their skill sets to always get them through. And I think they could have changed their game and played a little bit more in the right areas, and then they might have had those opportunities. So, yeah, it'll be interesting. But I hope Argentina can back it up this weekend. It's also given all those South African public generally hate New Zealand with an unbelievable passion. So all I've got is messages on this South African Smutby group, even though apparently New Zealand was still playing with 16, obviously the ref. I thought the ref was really harsh on New Zealand. But yeah, finally, they're so happy that they can just vent their anger at New Zealand. And they're saying the coach has got to go. He's had six games, he's won three of them, he's drawn one, he's lost two. Because he's lost back-to-back two, get rid of him. They are still world-class players. They will probably come back and play, I think, do they play the Pumas again on the 28th? And they'll probably win, and they'll win comfortably. But you give Argentina all this credit, but I don't think you can quite say they need to go to the bank and they need to change all this thing. They've had a coach like Wales for 8 years. They need to give the new guy the time to bed in and the players to just get back and get used to what they're doing. I mean, they've still won 3 out of 6 and drawn one. So they're still in the positive, but because it's New Zealand, get rid of everything. Start again.
You've played there, Hask. We were talking about Chris Ratter, who I don't think is known for mild headlines or certainly mild articles. It's time for an emergency procedure, he writes. The Herald's chief rugby writer, Ian Foster, must go. It's a nation hurting, the headline in the New Zealand Herald. And it's a full-blown crisis for the All Blacks, says Fox Sports New Zealand, which is remarkable when you think about the lulls that you had during your England career. I'd hate to know how we'd be describing that if we were down in New Zealand. But is it actually quite good for the All Blacks just to sort of mix it with the rest a little bit?
How can you fire someone after losing two games? Fuck me. I lost more games than I won for England at one point there was. I know in New Zealand there's like hunting, fishing and rugby. There's not a lot of chat, because if you take the rugby away, what Kiwi's got to talk about? All right, mate? Yeah. What about those silver ferns? And then it doesn't run out of things to say. So I think it's good. I think New Zealand are a world-class side. They are the best side in the world, right? They have been the best side for a long time. They are incredible. They are chock full of world-beating talent. And do you know what? This is going to make them way, way more dangerous, because they've got a team for the people that live and breathe winning. That's all they want. That's all they know. They have a system where, you know, everybody in their country wants to be an All Black. And also, they're going to take this so badly. I remember talking to Mar Nonna at one point. He had 77 caps. He'd lost 4 games. I was like, fucking hell. I think I got to 50 caps. I'd probably lost 40 of them. You know, I think we just need to take a little minute here. But this is the point with sport. And sensationalist stuff is that there's no rational thinking. And I would say a wounded and upset New Zealand side are an extremely dangerous side. And I would say that they're going to come back, and every team needs a period of rebuilding. And I guarantee that if Ian Foster is any good, and remember, a few weeks ago, he was the best thing since sliced bread. Eddie Jones was, let's fire Eddie Jones after losing to France. Eddie's lost it. Trains too hard. Let's get rid of him. Ian Foster's the best thing since sliced bread. Eddie Jones wins the Six Nations. Well done, Eddie. Master plan. Ian Foster, time to find a rethink, reskill, replan job, isn't it, Chief? And I just think it's utter shit. And I think that the point is every team needs a dip, and teams learn far more from losses. You know, when people have hit rock bottom in life and had moments of failure, you learn way more than skating high. And I guarantee they'll have some real honest meetings. But if you can drown out people like Chris Ratu, just fade him down, turn him down, you'll be absolutely fine.
We can always introduce Ian Foster to Amazon if he needs a second.
they're taking anybody these days.
Okay, don't panic in the All Black ranks. Quick word on Jordan Murphy, 23 years at Leicester, and time for a new challenge. You would have played against him a number of times, England and Ireland. I mean, it's not been a happy camp at Leicester. Is it sort of inevitable, or are you surprised he and Baltic haven't had more time to see if they can work the magic together?
I think there's going to be certain things that come out about it. There's obviously definitely some disagreements going on there, but there's questions at Leicester for a long time now. And unfortunately, the more you hear it, the more it sits at board level and what they're doing behind there. I mean, Austin sent out a scathing tweet, you know, straight after a guy who's been involved at the club for 23 years to be cut free without a exit plan for him in terms of allowing him to set himself up for when he leaves is just typical Leicester nowadays. So, you know, when you get those sort of messages from former, well, you can never call Austin a legend, but former sort of lifetime players at a club, it's not a good thing. And I think there's still a lot of problems there in terms of where they're going, their identity, what they are moving forward, which they lost about 4 years ago, 5 years ago. And if they don't find them, they're going to be in for tough times. And it makes it very hard for Borthers. I would imagine Geordie would have been quite a good wingman for him. And now he's sort of stuck on his own at this club that's, you know, possibly you could say should have been relegated twice if things hadn't happened. You know, I mean, they would have definitely been relegated this year if Saris hadn't had their what happened to them. And they got lucky with the Newcastle year, where I think Newcastle played better rugby, but they somehow managed to scrape through. So it's tough times at Leicester. Geordie's a great bloke, so I'm sure there'll be a lot of hands reaching out to sort of feed on his knowledge, and he'll pick something up pretty quickly.
Was it both as well, wanted him to leave, or was this board level just got him out?
The things I've read, I don't really know at the moment. I can't really read into it.
I'll be honest with you, it's really interesting. If you look at, because I've spoke to a couple of lads, and apparently, I mean, look, I could not be more. Jordan Murphy's an absolute legend. I think he's an incredible bloke. I've not got one bad word to say about him. I'm just playing devil's advocate here, or just looking at it for a different situation. I've heard about Borthers. I work with him. He's probably one of the hardest working, most developed coaches I've ever worked with. Incredible bloke, hard working, talented. It's interesting though, when you come in as a new management role, sort of rule number one on these things is you kind of take, you know, you either do what happened with sort of like a Martin Johnson or someone where you inherit people, you keep people on board, people have been there, you know, old, and they have old associations, or you come in like an Eddie Jones and you clear everything out. And Steve Borthwick is a product of an Eddie Jones style situation. I'm not saying Borthwick had anything to do with this, but I would say that sometimes, however harsh that is, you need to start afresh and bring your people in. And I'm sure Geordie would be anyone and work brilliantly and be fantastic. But I'm just saying that there's potentially something along those lines, maybe. I don't know. I'm not informed about it. But I think it'd be interesting, because certainly if I came in, for all the managements and teams I've seen, where you get problems are, so you get people talking in corners and everything else like that. And I, if I was ever in charge of a club, I'd come in from the S&C to the physios to everything. I'd fade it all out and build it around my standards. But I don't know if this has happened in this case, and I'm sure they would have, Walters and Tim would have worked brilliantly together. But I just wonder if that might be the case.
I was going to say very sad for Jordan, but I'm sure he'll be back in the game before very long at all. We should ask actually Ellis, who I know raves about Steve and is very excited about what's going to happen up front for the Tigers, and off the back of a platform, we know what they can do. So watch this space, I suppose.
I think Jordan Murphy is regarded as one of the nicest and best lads in rugby. You know, like I've never met anybody who's got a bad word to say about him. His passion, I've always admired him, always like playing against him. He's lovely. So, you know, good people always come out well. It's the bad people. I mean, actually, ironically, in rugby, bad people still get employed. Like, it's a lot of job for the boys, but Jordan Murphy is one of the good guys, and eventually they get wheedled out, but he will get employed again, I'm sure.
Come and have a coffee on the pod at some point, or something stronger. Maybe he needs something a little stronger at this point.
That sounds to me like a live show, that one. It possibly doesn't go out. A jiffy show.
Yeah, oh, Jesus Christ. That's what it's just known as, doing a jiffy. Autumn Nations Cup. I tell you what, let's start with Scotland. Mm. Okay, the new. 5 wins on the bounce. Given how much pressure, we talk about pressure as coaches. Gregor Townsend was having a horribly bumpy time. I think it was earlier this year, wasn't it? February, March time. And now suddenly five on the bounce.
Off the back of the World Cup and everything, yeah.
Back of the World Cup, fair play. They beat Italy 28-17. Credit to Italy as well, who look like they've got a bit more mongrel about them. Is this a full-on renaissance, or is this just beating what's in front of you, Tins?
I'm about to get attacked by kids, so hang on.
Okay, Hass.
No, it's okay. It's okay. I heard the door handle of a 2-year-old going, yee. They've tightened up the nuts and bolts, I think. Obviously, on the weekend, losing Richie, it could be hard going forward. I don't know what he's actually done. But I think now they have a quality pack that they can work off. And you know, Weir comes in, and he hasn't played international for however long it is,
how many years it is.
And I thought he was outstanding the way he took on the line, the way he got things moving very well. I thought Harris played well. I thought just all over the board. But at the same time, massive respect to Italy at the same time in terms of what they brought in that first 60 minutes. You know, if you look at them, what Georgia brought against us, if Italy play with like that every week, then they deserve to be where they are and they deserve that role in the Six Nations. I thought, you know, their back row was fantastic. Fischidi was outstanding. I just thought it was great to see them just so confrontational, carrying their back row, Pelledri. But then what Scotland did so well was weather that storm, and then they sort of just came back into it. They gave far too many penalties away in that first half, which put them under a lot of pressure. But then the way they sort of came back, and Van der Merwe, you know, he's a beast, caused lots of problems. You know, you give them credit, they seem to be building that resilience to be able to get wins. And at international rugby, as Haskell will tell you, being able to win in those tough games, those tight games, they give you more confidence than anything else.
I want to talk Ireland-Wales as well. And we're talking coaches under pressure. 6 on the bounce now for Wayne Pivac. Give him some... Funnily enough, those sort of Scarlets fans will remember he needed a while just to get the Scarlets playing the way that he wanted them to. And then they went on to win, I think it was the Pro 14. I mean, is it again, just calm down, everybody. Give him some time. We're playing Autumn Nations Cup. Let's give him a proper extended run to try the things that he wants to try.
Following Warren Gatland is very much like following Sir Alex Ferguson at Manchester United, right? Like, it seems like a great idea, like a really good career advancement. But it is a poison chalice, because if it doesn't go well, then the comparisons are there. If it goes well, then it's brilliant. But it's a very hard thing to do when you are changing something. And bear in mind that Warren is probably one of the most successful rugby coaches there's ever been, and had a unique style that while they adapted, they didn't go in and really change over, you know, or go mad. If you look at Wales, I think it was interesting, the Six Nations, they had first for that ball in hand, first for passes, first for offloads, but also first for turnovers. And it was like, are they playing too much with it? And we sort of talked about, you know, Alwyn Jones, you know, offloading, reinventing his game. And you can see there's kind of endeavour there. For me, you need to have... someone's trying to call me. My mum's trying to call me. I don't know why. For me, you need to have...
And to get home, is it, James?
Yeah. For me, you need to have... Oh, fuck off, mum. tell my mum to stop calling me. And fuck me, mum. Go away. what I'm saying is that...
Do you want to answer it? Get her live on the pod.
No, Jesus, no. So basically, Wayne Pivac didn't actually have that massive rugby CV. He'd done really well at Scarlets, but he hadn't done anything of real note. And I think when you're taking over an international, you sort of can't be the union's man. You need some of these mavericks. Like Warren Gatland wasn't Welsh, had nothing to do with Wales, was a Kiwi. Eddie Jones, you know, the first and most successful, well, the second most successful coach in England, potentially, I don't know what the stats are, was the most un-RFU man that's ever been. And I just think, I don't know, I think you've got to give him some faith, because I think it's harsh and we don't operate like football. But I also have my reticence about some of it.
Interesting. I mean, first half in Dublin, Wales had 14% of territory and 23% possession. Alan of Wales, or Alwyn Jones, saying that they aren't going to shy away from defeat. But Tins, you went through a bumpy old time with England off the back of the glory of 03. I mean, how the hell do you dig your way out of a game where... actually, if you look at the defeats, it's seemingly getting worse, not better.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough because, you know, you lose your defence coach as well. You get rid of Byron Hayward in the week, which just makes it even trickier. But with Pivac, I think it's a completely different style of play to Warren Gatland as well. You know, you look at what Scarlett's played when they're under him and running smoothly. It was a beautiful offloading game. Keep the ball off the floor, which is completely the opposite to what Wales have played for the last 8 years, or however long, 12 years or whatever Gatland's been there for. So it is going to take time. And if you go through that team, there's a few changes in the pack as well, aren't there? There's a couple of young kids and new names coming through. Yet still that back line is, in my eyes, is still world class in terms of who's on there. You've still got George North on the bench and... But it's just not clicking in any way. We talked earlier in Six Nations before lockdown that people were offloading. When they were getting it right, it looked so slick. But at the moment, it feels like they're still reverting back to the old beast that they were, but not in the same efficiency as where they were before. I mean, what do I always say against when you play Ireland is you can't give your discipline's got to be bang on. You can't give away penalties. They gave away a shedload of penalties in the wrong area. And then they were facing five 10-metre line-outs and you're in trouble all day long against Ireland. So, yeah, they're obviously, again, in struggle. But I still think there are players in there where you've got to give this guy time to try and make those differences. And the problem is now is when you're losing that many games is how do you get out of that the bog that you're in and sort of free themselves up to allow them to express themselves. And he's just got to take the pressure off. I don't know. We always used to do a good team piss up and do that, but I don't think you can sort of do that nowadays. So I don't know, but he's got to find a way of taking that sort of pressure off their shoulders and letting them do what they do, because I think the players are still there in that Welsh team to go and do it. They are in a tough spot at the moment, and it's going to be hard for them. That, you know, only they can get themselves out of it.
Out of the Six Nations, right, it was carries made 549 most. Ball handling, 1,256, most. Passes made, 755, most. Offloads made, 48, most. Knock-ons, 34, most. Handling errors, 79, most. Turnovers conceded, 59, most. So it's like...
As a team of excess in all departments.
Yeah, it's like everything they're doing in one hand, they're just fucking it up in the other. And it's like, that screams of playing in the wrong areas, playing too much, trying to force stuff. Whereas Wales of old... were very direct, work around the corner, big ball carries in the middle, stretch them, hope the numbers run out, and then beat them. I think there is no doubt in that Wales squad, exactly what Mike says, is chocked full of talent. I don't know. I think he doesn't turn it round. You know, again, Welsh are very unforgiving if their national team isn't going well. But I tell you what, I'll tell you this now. They beat England... all will be forgiven.
As long as we beat the English, we don't care, I think.
They'll carry on.
Do you want to pay any credit, any bouquets to Ireland, Tins, or have we still not reached that point?
Ireland were at their clinical best, I think. You know, obviously this week's going to be, it's going to be interesting to see what happens this week, whether Sexton's going to be back from that hamstring, whether Billy Burns is going to be... I don't know, I can't really figure out why Billy went off. I know he got a bad hit, but I don't know what he went off with. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens around who they bring on. But I thought they were at their clinical best. But I also think that Wales played a little bit into their hands, giving them penalties away, allowing them to get that possession that they want. And to be fair, if Doris had got that flip to Kieran Healy and Kieran Healy had scored, I would have been putting that on my social media, and I don't like to put anything of Irish on my social media. So, but fortunately, he got turtled. Turnover, Bab. Apple turnover and over the try line. And but no, I thought they were impressive. And I think if England want to beat them this weekend, they're going to have to raise their game a lot. It was Ireland being clinical and Wales being very loose, I think.
Marks out of 10 for England, Georgia. Ask.
It's one of those games I saw. You know, I saw Anna Goo was talking about. You know, on his rugby cast, Pollen was talking about. You know, Eddie cut out the. Deflection chat, and it's got to be 50 points or it's unacceptable. I think it's one of those things where you know you're expected to win, and if you don't win by enough, you start question marks over you, then you win by too much, you're always supposed to win. I think what was really important about this England performance was the set piece battle, because, you know, with all due respect to Georgia, they are a developing team and they do have, you know, stuff to offer, but their scrum Maul, pick and go, you know, is their bread and butter. We trained against them in the Six Nations 2018. They got me in for a scrummaging session in a fallow week.
Did you do that session?
Yeah.
I'd forgotten that you were involved in that. What is the story behind that? Because apparently a lot of that carried over.
Oh, yeah, it kicked off big time, right? So
a proper old-school dust-up.
Oh, yeah. So basically what happened is, the whole idea is we were going to scrummage against them. Originally, it was supposed to scrummage against them, but it then ended up being the backs going against their backs, doing some pick and go, doing whatever. And the first scrum we went down, and I think, I can't remember, Neil Hatley was coaching us, and basically fired up the front row. They were talking about the detail. And they went to go for the first scrum, and Georgia mugged off the lads, like dummy to go down. The blokes folded up on the floor, referee, Wayne Barnes was in, penalty to Georgia. Right? Outsmarted them. Gnarly, Cash Philly, Ash Philly, no Cash Philly. That's like me, no Cash Philly. Yeah, not a mate of mine. I'm full Cash Philly. And basically got on the floor. And that was like a mental game to start with. And basically, they had this torrid scrummaging session where these boys were sort of using old school nouse, bullying the lads. Then we had a line-out drive session, which descended into a fight. Courtney was in there rucking, offering some bloke out. It was kicking off. It might have, I don't think it fully went to blows. And then I was doing some stuff with the backs at the back row. And basically one of the Georgian players was basically going full bore in a touch. And Paul Gustard grabbed me. And he was like, "Ass, come over here. I need you to fucking end that guy." And I was like, "What do you mean?" He goes, "He's fucking taking the piss." So then I had to go and fucking flatten this guy because I was like, right, he's bullying your mates, go and fill him in. So I had to go fly into him. So he'd run into me like lightly, and I'd have to bury him, pushing and shoving. So it kind of erupted. But the beauty of that game was that we did a job on them. We absolutely took the legs out of them. And I think that is a sign of a maturing side, to be able to have those young guys, to be able to put that together. And you saw they just had nothing else about them. And I think that's where you award the points. Great Maul, Jamie George, hat-trick hero. I mean, I texted him congratulations. He thought I was taking the piss, but I was like, "Mate, when you've retired, that just goes down as three tries. Nobody's going to remember that you fell over from 5 minutes out." So you accept that. I thought, great to see Jack Willis on his debut. Turnover, two tries he scored, but they only gave him the one.
I know.
And I thought the rest of the lads, I thought Charlie Yules was great. I thought, Marrow was his best. Big Billy V. I thought for a forwards day, I'd give him, 8 out of 10 for that. And I would say that they're great work. Well done. Move on to next game.
Succinctly put. I suppose that the only sort of note on that is that the Georgia-Italy debate has probably been quietened off the back of this weekend, hasn't it?
Well, I think it quietened off the back of the Scotland game when they played them in their warm-up game. They were atrocious in that as well.
They haven't, to be fair, had a lot of preparation time, I don't think.
In that game, they didn't have their French players. So they were better against England, but still, they're a long way off the pace. But I did like what their coach said. He said, "Don't judge us on these games, judges on the next time we play, because we're in a fact-finding mission about where we are and what we need to improve." Yeah. And I don't think that's a bad approach for him to come out and say from the off, because it is a different level, it is a different gravy, and they need more exposure at this level if you want to talk about them, having a run with Italy. Yes, they've won, 11 out of the last 12 European, whatever the second division is called. They need a little bit more talent throughout that squad, and if that means getting more players, they need to look at getting more players in there playing in France and how they go from there.
Wales this weekend, could they?
Well,
if they do, Pivac's dust. I'm not one for sensationalism.
Sorry, Chris Ratu. What was that?
That's what I mean. But listen, lads, there's the Ratu effect, which is utter crap, but we haven't thought about anything. And then there's the I'm telling you, you lose to Georgia. I mean, I don't know where they're playing. Well, they play them in Wales.
Yeah.
Principality will be burnt down.
They're in Llanelli, aren't they? Because they're not using it.
But listen, I'm not even making that up. That's what will happen, 100%.
Are either of you brave enough to call that, or are we just going to get Wales to stumble through and get back on the horse?
I think that's a game where Wales could suit Wales. I think Wales will fancy they'll let their back line have a good go at them and give the ball to the likes of Liam Williams. They'll cause problems. I think it'll actually suit them and suit how Pivot wants to play in some ways if they can get those offloads and keep the ball off the floor. But then you're in Llanelli, you don't know what the weather's going to bring you. So we'll have to wait and see on that.
Also, just about the Georgia point, when you see them up close, mate, they are big men. Like, if you can harness that, you know, the size and sort of physicality and athletic nature of that country, then yeah, I think Tins is exactly right. We need to give that exposure. And I think, you know, look, I think Wales will win. You know, whatever happens tactically, you don't become bad players overnight. And, you know, all those Welsh players are awesome players. Now, I'll actually say, when I was on the Lions tour, I was blown away by how good and how talented those individual Welsh players were. You know, I sort of knew, but I'm seeing them up close. And it was kind of quite nice that they used to play Warren ball, because if they had something different, you know, we could be in a bit of trouble. They might have actually, you know, I'm not going to say they would have won the World Cup, because hell would have to froze open, but you know what I mean?
Yeah. One of the best social things that came out of it, again, mainly South Africans are doing the abuse about this, was, I'm not even going to attempt his name, the seven. He's a Villi. He's not an Adza, he's a Villi. I think he's Tikhiliashvili, where he gave Faz the full fend in the face and just literally picked him off the floor and dumped him. I've seen that a lot of times on social media, that so many people are so happy that Faz has finally been dumped on his arse rather than knocking someone else over.
Faz.
That was a positive to come out of it for them. They went social.
South Africa, we need 400 to 500 minutes to be ready for international competition. Argentina, we'll just take a year off, if that's all right, and then we're going to fucking beat the best team in the world. So I like that. But then someone said, that's Razzy Erasmus being astute.
Very, very. Why would you not? Particularly with the Lions coming next year. You've already got Pollard in plaster cast. Just Tins, just on that, if you want further evidence as to why we're not perhaps doing more in live broadcasting, I think the fact that you've gone, I can't pronounce his name, but it's a Villi, not a Yashtadi, is possibly one reason why you haven't got one of the commentary mics behind you.
Further
evidence should it be required?
Well,
we don't need to do that.
We'd obviously
the big Georgian, if in trouble.
Yeah, but we don't want to do the name part. Someone like you know, you get an Eddie Butler for that, you know, with the names and say it all. I don't want to do the names part because I couldn't do it. I can't pronounce English names, let alone.
But how do you pronounce TKHILAISHALLI?
You don't. You go number seven for Georgian.
The big seven. I don't know which letters you leave out in Georgian. I mean, Mamuka Kashvili is easy, but there are some that are not particularly easy.
No. I tell you one thing I've always wanted to know, because I looked at the teams, and interestingly enough, most of the forwards' surnames ended with Villi, and then all the other players ended with DZE. How culturally do you have everybody has the end of the same name? Because then you look at the England team, and it's like Stewart, Genge, Tindall. Why do you have all a country with all either Villi or DZE? I don't know how that works. Does anyone know?
And I don't reckon Lasher Jelani is Georgian. He must be from somewhere else.
Do you think he's Curzon's favourite player?
He's the only one in the whole squad that doesn't end. Oh no, there is another one.
That's the content they come for. Right, you've got you could have one sentence answers. Italy, Fiji, fingers crossed Fiji are allowed to play. And actually, funny enough, it looks like Fiji are going to have a team in Super Rugby in 2022, which is an unbelievable Pacific Moana, I think it's going to be. Someone will correct me if I'm wrong. So that is an amazingly big step forward, and fingers crossed that comes together. But Italy, Fiji?
I think Fiji would take them, but that try Italy scored was outstanding. Italy playing well. Yeah, that Zanon at 13, big man, Zanon. Broke tackles for fun. And then the Bellini and they were, good. I thought
more
that
quality
was
content.
Well,
I
know.
You're like a car. You're like a car that's stuck in the mud, just revving furiously, right, trying to get out, but just
sinking
deeper.
I'll say it again. It is Zanon, right? It is Zanon, isn't it? Zanon. Yeah. How do you say it in Italian, flary language, that you like you say it in? The 13 for Italy was outstanding, big and strong. Then you have Minozzi at fullback. Bellini was outstanding, I thought, as well. So there are good players through there, and they did play some good stuff. So I think it'll be a good game with Fiji. I think Fiji will come out on top. But if they're so loose, I think it'll also help Italy get into the game.
Moana Pacifica, apologies. That's the
another shit content from you, Alex. Doing research.
All right, good. Yeah,
the infighting, the cracks are appearing. Someone's to say, right, fire everyone. Start again with the good, the bad, the rugby.
Scotland, France, no Romain Untermack because of injury. Does that swing things Scotland's way, or are France too strong, too good to the form team right now?
I think Dupont for me at nine. You know, he's the mini general. I think Scotland are on. I think it'll be a close game. I just, I think France obviously had that, you know, that kind of suicide moment. Was it with Poirot when he belted with that guy? That's essentially what lost them the Six Nations. I think there'll be two
strong. Awas.
Awas. Sorry, Poirot. I apologise.
just general
little,
slander.
It is a little grey sales. Different Poirot. But anyway, I think France will be too strong for Scotland. But I think it'll be closer than people potentially imagine. But, you know, Scotland are on a roll. Confidence builds confidence. Winning leads to winning.
I still think France will have too much in the locker.
England, Ireland?
I never bet against England. I think England. But, look, the banana skin team for me my entire career were Ireland. You know, lost two Grand Slam games or three Grand Slams against them. The hardest team to play. You know, Andy Farrell, you know, great coach, great motivator, great orator. You know, if you're going to have these boys ready to fire up and be ready to play, I think England will have to go up a gear. But I would never bet against England. I think this England side's in a good place, chock full of talent. I think it'll be interesting to see who he goes back row for me. Obviously, with you know, they've got more variety than Bertie Bassett, and I think I'm looking forward to it.
See, we've done that.
I think England will raise their game. They need to, but I actually was quite impressed with Ireland, so we'll see if they can bring that to Twickenham. But I still fancy England at home.
Can I just say one thing, just as we finish up here? If there was a World Cup next week, how bloody good would it be? With the All Blacks struggling, Argentina up top, England and Ireland looking really strong, Scotland five on a row, France the form team in Europe.
South Africa too scared to play,
so obviously that opens it up for everybody. But I mean, have we seen the top eight, possibly top 10, just concertina right together? Or is it just the state of 2020 that, you know, no fans in stadiums, it's all a bit...
Yeah, it's definitely looser with no fans in the stadium, I feel. I think whether it's just the way it's happened, I don't know, really. I don't know, it's so weird this year. I can't really get my head around it in terms of figuring out why people are on form, why aren't people on form. It's, you know, it just doesn't seem to make sense, and it quite confuses me and scares me. So bring on 2021.
I know it's pointing out the absolute bleeding obvious, but rugby is fucking awful without a crowd. Like, yeah. It is awful. Like, even it's sort of like, you know, you go to a restaurant and they serve you a steak and it's 90% fat, and your partner leans across and goes, oh, there's a nice bit. And you're like, love, honestly, it's nice of you to try to break it to me, but this is just a pile of shit. Like, I watched these games. Like, I watched the Wales game. I watched the, Wales-Scotland last week at the end of the Six Nations gave me depression. Like, I don't suffer from mental health issues. But I was honestly watching it, and I was like this. Chloe's like, what's wrong? And I was like, I need a dog. The dog's one of them special dogs that, like, cheers you up when you're having a moment.
Happy dogs.
Happy dogs. It wears a little mood jacket. Dog. Yeah, because I mate, it is awful. And then when you watch like Argentina, New Zealand, and you see people in the crowd, you're like, this is why we do it. And I know, you know, we had Eddie Jones on, and he came and he said, you know, you're going to discover whether people like to play rugby because they want to play it, and, you know, where they play for each other. I can categorically say I would hate it. I would, honest to God, it would be, I mean, I didn't have some of the best seasons of my life, but this would be just terrible. And please, just get us back at some point. Like, you know, when you reopen it and you think about cramming people in pubs, cramming people in theatres, let's just get a few people in the stadiums.
Just imagine if Hask did play in stadiums, he would never have had to spend that much money on that psychologist. His dad wouldn't have sort of broken down after each game every week.
Yeah, I wouldn't have had to see him.
No one would have seen it. You'd have been fine.
We've always known that he's enjoyed performing in front of a crowd, though. So on that note, let's just finish it. This week, good luck to those who've got to try and tidy it up. There's a lot of yillies, billies, a lot of ums and ahs.
I just got a message from producer going, thank God I'm here.
That's why we don't really talk about rugby. Don't forget, and fingers crossed, we get a proper belting round two. Let's hope we have Fiji back in it. Let's hope England, Ireland's a humdinger. Let's hope Georgia push Wales. And let's hope Scotland, France is full, meaty and thoroughly enjoyable. We can certainly go up a gear. But don't forget, of course, you can watch the Autumn Nations Cup live on Prime Video every weekend throughout the tournament. And you can follow and subscribe to @PrimeVideoSport on YouTube, Instagram, Twitter and TikTok. And you can go to our YouTube channel for the Team of the Week, which has got a little twist to it as well. So get involved in that if you'd like to. Prizes to be won. Fun, what was it? Prizes to be what?
Prize to be won. A whole lot of fun. Prize to be won. Pat Sharp and then two twins.
Pat Sharp. Yeah. I need to up my hair. Yes.
Is that the fun house?
Yeah, it would have been.
And that's coming out as well. That's it for the Good, the Bad and the Rugby this week as well. Thanks to Has, thanks to Tins, and thank you for all the feedback that we have on the Jason Robinson show last week as well. Don't forget to join the conversation across our social channels at Good Bad Rugby. We are back next week with a very special guest. We had to move him from this week because he was out doing bits. We'll explain more next week. We are definitely going to be down under in 7 days' time. And don't forget to sign up to our live event on November 28th ahead of England-Wales, the perfect warm-up to what should be a very enjoyable game. Thank you for listening. Thank you for watching. Enjoy round two of the Autumn Nations Cup. We'll see you next week. Take it away, Rob Brydon. Look after yourselves. Bye for now.
Thank you so much for listening to The Good, The Bad and The Rugby. It can't have been easy.